The division of this country just drives me crazy. And I don't think it started on January 6th. January 6th may have been the boiling point of it, but it's so disheartening. And that's why one of the phrases that I repeated in my congressional testimony that was repeated during the impeachment hearings is "This America," because that's not the vision that I have for America. But the answer to that question is, yes, it is America. And we could sit around and act like everything's okay. But I think that's how we got to the point where we are now. There's a lot of individuals who feel marginalized and feel like a party doesn't represent them.
Harry Dunn is not your typical congressional candidate. On January 6th, 2021, he was one of the police officers who defended the Capitol against the violent insurrection of Trump supporters, hell-bent on overturning the presidential election. Dunn, who had been on the Capitol police force for more than a decade, endured physical attacks and racist vitriol as he defended the peaceful transition of power, and quickly emerged as one of the leading advocates for accountability in the aftermath of the attack. When he testified in a congressional hearing about what he and his fellow officers endured that day, his tearful account immediately went viral. President Biden later awarded him the Presidential Citizens Medal, the second highest award a civilian can get. Now, Dunn has left the Capitol Police Force to protect democracy from inside the halls of Congress. He's running in a crowded Democratic primary to represent Maryland's 3rd congressional district. And the pro-democracy message of his campaign reflects the nation's broader grappling with the legacy of January 6th, especially with Trump running for president again. Even though Dunn has been endorsed by several high-profile congressional Democrats, the May 14th primary promises to be a tight race. I spoke to Dunn back in February when he opened up about the meaning of January 6th, why he thinks his emotional testimony went viral, and what he thinks needs to change to save American democracy. I'm Charlotte Alter, senior correspondent for Time, and this is Person of the Week. So, Harry, can you tell me a little bit about where you're from in Maryland and sort of the community that you grew up in?
Sure. I grew up in Prince George's County, Clinton, to be exact. I was born on Andrews Air Force Base. My father's a retired Air Force veteran. Spent most of my childhood there. I lived in England for about 4 years because my father, like I said, was still in the military when I was born. And then I came back over here. I went to elementary school, the Prince George's County school system. Got a scholarship to go to James Madison University, played football there, got my degree in public health. Then I moved to Silver Spring.
Mm-hmm. And so, you know, coming off of this degree in public health, how did you decide to make the decision to join law enforcement?
So, you know, I've always wanted to have a opportunity to help people, to serve people. Even in college, I was a bouncer at some nightclubs or local bars.
Mm-hmm.
But just having, you know, respect for police. I didn't have, you know, bad encounters with police growing up as a child. You know, I grew up in a suburban community. I spent a lot of time on Andrews Air Force Base growing up. I even bagged at the local commissary. I played for the sports club teams on base. So I was always involved in something. So my interactions with police were few and far between.
Mm-hmm.
And I know this is different from so many communities and individuals in, you know, marginalized communities, that my interactions with the police were different than a lot of other people experience. So yeah, I definitely thought it was a way to help people and give back to the community.
Mm-hmm. So in your 15 years as a Capitol police officer, what did you learn about the way the Capitol works? Tell me about what that job was like before January 6th.
I mean, we had a front row seat to the chaos in Congress every day. So I was always curious about how it worked. You know, where do they sit? What side is the majority side? What side is the minority side? Even just simple logistics, who gets to decide, you know, the schedule,
right?
Day-to-day operations. I just had a front row seat to when I was just genuinely inquisitive. But growing into adulthood, paying bills, seeing how their decisions, the legislation that they enact affects you directly, you start to pay attention to it. And sometimes it's not always for the best. So, you know, that combined with my inquisitiveness, led me to be very engaged and involved in politics, even at a young adult age. I can remember one of the first times I saw President Obama at the Capitol. I was starstruck, you know, for a moment. But, you know, you got to remember why you're there as a police officer. We don't have the opportunity to watch them. We're watching the individuals around them to make sure that they're not in any harm or anything like that.
Yeah. You know, from your perch as the Capitol Police officer, you saw inaugurations, you saw joint sessions of Congress, State of the Union addresses, major legislation being passed, major moments in American history over the course of 15 years. Was there one event that you witnessed that made you particularly proud to be an American?
Several. However, one of my proudest moments was after January 6th, and it was when the members of Congress went back to the Capitol in the night hours following the attack at the Capitol and certified the election. That gave me a great sense of pride, one, being an American, but also the pride of me and my coworkers that we actually prevailed that day. No matter how ugly it was, the goal of a lot of individuals that day was to stop the certification of the election, and they didn't, due to several factors, but most of them being the heroic actions of my coworkers and myself. That made me extremely proud because it came in the face of adversity. It was like triumph.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm glad you brought up January 6th because obviously there's a lot to talk about there. What were your thoughts as the day began on January 6th? Was it a normal day?
You know, what is a normal day at the U.S. Capitol? Over my 15-year career, I think it's safe to estimate the thousands of protests that I've been a part of, not participating in, but, you know, creating a safe environment for American citizens to protest and exercise their First Amendment right at the Capitol, no matter what the issue is, peacefully. And that's the key word, peaceful. I expected it was going to be a large gathering, a large rally, where individuals may have got out of order and may have gotten arrested, you know, civil disobedience. The civil went out the window in the hours after my shift started at the Capitol. And it was just nothing I'd ever seen before. You know, in the Capitol Police, the training academy, we prepare for a lot of things, but I've never prepared for a violent overtaking of the Capitol before. And, you know, throughout the day, a lot of individuals just fell back on surviving and making sure the person next to them was able to go home safely to their families. Because throughout the day, that's what it became. A lot of individuals didn't know if they were going to make it home or not.
What had you been briefed about the demonstrations that were scheduled that day? I mean, was it communicated to you that this might be something to take more seriously than your average protest?
Not through the department. I've seen chatter on Twitter or Instagram, hey, we're storming the Capitol. And I had assumed that if that was a known possibility, there's no way in the world that our department would not tell us or prepare us accordingly for that. However, we saw that that wasn't true. You know, I don't think it's some big conspiracy or, God, I hope not. I just think it was some incompetence on somebody's part that day. I don't know who. Like I said, I was just a frontline officer, like the other hundreds of officers that were there that day. But somebody, somewhere, dropped the ball about the intelligence, about what we could have faced that day. And that's just the reality of it.
Yeah. And so what was the moment that you realized that this event was going to be a lot more serious than you anticipated?
I mean, even on January 5th, there were hundreds and hundreds of people outside the Capitol, outside the Supreme Court, doing all types of rallying and protest. And, you know, we heard that it was going to be even more people on the 6th. So driving in to work on the 6th, we're in the middle of COVID. You know, Washington, D.C., the city is shut down, so to speak. So usually it's an easy drive into work. There's no traffic. But when I got on my ride in the morning, once I got into D.C., there were people walking around the streets it was just different. Like, where are these people coming from? And they weren't protesting. It was just a lot of people. And this is 6:30 in the morning. Like, what the heck are all these people doing? When we got to the Capitol, there were a few people there, a handful of people, which is weird for that early in the morning. And as the day continued to grow and the crowds continued to swell at the Capitol, I mean, every 5-10 minutes, there was an update. Hey, we have a group of 50 headed towards the Capitol from Union Station. Or, hey, we have a group of 100 headed towards the Capitol from the mall. It was just like, what?
Yeah.
And to be clear, everybody there wasn't violent or uprising against the government. Everybody there wasn't. But there were a lot of people who were.
Right.
And not to mention, you know, the rhetoric that was spewed by the former president that day. He saw a vulnerable group of individuals who were just dying to be heard. And he exploited them, you know, and here we are.
You know, January 6th came just months after this summer of racial justice protests, in which the country was divided over the role of police, particularly when it comes to what police mean to Black Americans. And some of the people who were on the side of, like, back the blue aligned with some of the people who were at the Capitol that day. So how did it feel to have people who had been politically aligned with this movement that was allegedly in defense of police officers violently attacking you and your fellow police officers that day?
It was lip service. The whole back the blue, it's a cool hashtag to put in your Twitter or X bio, but it doesn't really carry any weight unless you stand by that no matter what. Mm-hmm. And that's the thing, there's very few issues that people should be absolutist about. You shouldn't back the blue when they clearly violated somebody's civil rights. You violate people's rights, then you're wrong. Just as simple as that. So I didn't put much stock into a lot of individuals claiming to back the blue because it's all just a cool talking point. And like I said, it's a cool hashtag or a cool bumper sticker that people can fundraise off of.
Yeah. I want to talk specifically about your congressional testimony. When you spoke, you were really open about your emotions and the fear that you felt that day. And the trauma of that experience. What was it like to be so emotionally vulnerable in such a public setting?
It's crazy. I go back and I look at, you know, some of the testimony or little clips or even pictures from the testimony that day. And I say to myself, I was crying on national television with millions of people watching me. And I become a meme. And that just goes to show that the world is a cruel place. The world is a very cruel place. But I didn't really care what anybody had to say about me. And I don't know if I owe it to my stature, you know, standing 6'7", 350 pounds, or just the way I was raised to be authentically me. Mm-hmm. And I'm fortunate to have that mindset because I couldn't imagine what a lot of other people feel in this world that they can't express freely without judgment how they feel. And what I focused on was how many people I was helping by being vulnerable and transparent that day and sharing my emotions and emitting empathy. Mm-hmm. And, you know, like I said, this mind of public service, that made it easy.
Yeah. When that was happening, what was going through your mind and your heart emotionally?
In that moment, it was literally reliving what happened that day. And that controlled and consumed my thoughts. That was a lot.
Yeah.
It was genuinely hurtful. And I was reliving it that day. Mm-hmm. You know, PTSD is real. And that was a moment of, you know, vulnerability for me. And it was tough to relive.
Mm-hmm. And so you've been very open about going to counseling since this event. What do you want other other men and other police officers, frankly, to know about the importance of emotional health, particularly when you're faced with a traumatic event like this?
You know, one thing I have learned is that things don't go away until you deal with them. They'll always pop back up in some other identity. Trauma doesn't go away until you heal. And even then, when you heal, that doesn't go away. Like if you get a scar, the scar still remains. It's still there. And the difference is you deal with it in a healthy way. So if it does resurface, you know how to deal with it. And that's one of the things I've learned about therapy. It doesn't prevent you from experiencing trauma in life or trials and tribulations. What it does do is it helps you navigate when those things do occur and rear its ugly head. Mm-hmm. It's preparing you and giving you the tools that you need to deal with life when life happens.
More with Harry Dunn in a minute.
So what do you make of the fact that there's now, 3 years later, a proportion of this country that believes that this was a peaceful protest?
I guess that's why it's important for me to be doing what I'm doing right now. Mm-hmm. They want individuals to be silent. They want their message to be loud. They don't want any resistance or pushback with truth. They don't like those clips that show what they said in the past. That's why it's so important for people to stand up and push back against it. And that's one of the reasons why, and maybe getting a little ahead of myself now, why it's important for me to run for Congress, to have a seat at the table with those individuals, not to be a reminder. I'm not trying to be a fixture or a symbol there. I love my country, and what they're doing right now is wrong. And I've been fighting for 3 years just as a concerned American citizen. You know, when I went to the White House, I received my citizen's medal. I didn't wear my uniform. I wore a suit. I wasn't doing it as a Capitol Police officer. I was just an American citizen who hates the direction that our country's headed. Mm-hmm. You know, when I wrote my book, Standing My Ground, people asked me what did I want to accomplish or what did I hope that lawmakers took from it. I didn't expect any of those people to read the book, the lawmakers or anything like that. One of the most powerful tools that we have as American citizens is our vote. And I think an educated voter is the best type of voter out there. And, you know, I think that our world, this country right now is, on fire. And I was hoping that my book would kind of be a fire extinguisher to shed light and some truth about what happened that day, what's happening now in this country. Mm-hmm. But that's why I think it's so important for individuals like myself, like Michael Fanone, Sergeant Gunnell, Danny Hodges, people that are coming out and speaking out about what happened that day and refusing to be quiet, refusing to let people run away with the narrative that nothing really happened that day.
Mm-hmm. So you stepped down from your position as an officer last year and announced that you're running for Congress in Maryland's 3rd Congressional District. What went into that decision after so many years of service?
You know, I'm still trying to figure that out. Who in their right mind, you know, willingly goes and joins Congress? Like,
yeah, especially given what you've
you're seeing
just
all
been
the dysfunction,
yeah.
Right? Like, that's what you want to run as far away as you can from it. No, but in all seriousness, if not me, then who? You know, do I just sit back and wait for somebody else to do it? And maybe they will. Maybe they will. Or maybe they won't. But I do know that the fight that I'm willing to put up, that I have put up, I am capable of doing the job. Mm-hmm. One, January 6th is the catalyst that made all of this happen, the run for Congress and the potential of being elected. That made it all happen. But one thing that has always existed pre and post January 6th is my love for this country, my love for public service and doing what's right. And that, along with the democratic values that I have, the common sense approach to things, I think will make me a very effective leader, representative in Congress. And, you know, it's not just January 6th. I care about common sense gun reform. I come from a family of women, four sisters and a daughter. I care for women's rights and securing those, voting rights, speaking up for marginalized communities, individuals. As a Black man, like I said earlier, I didn't have negative experiences with the police, but I know for so many individuals, that couldn't be further from the truth. And I acknowledge that. And just somebody that's willing to listen and put other people above themselves is what I think that I can do, you know, better than a lot of other people going forward. And also, talking about leaving the job, you know, I stepped down, I resigned almost 4 years short of being able to collect a full pension.
Wow. Why?
Because we can't wait. I don't know what, I don't think we have the luxury, like I said, to sit and see how things are going to play out. And that's why it's so important to have individuals in Congress mm-hmm. that will fight back for the people and the constituents of their districts.
Yeah. Has working in the Capitol for more than 15 years taught you anything about what kind of member of Congress you want to be if you do prevail in your congressional bid?
Yes. Yes. I'm so glad you asked that. Because what I've seen, like I said, my adult life has been dedicated to public service.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't believe a lot. I don't like to use a lot. It's tough to use a qualifying word there. Some members of Congress aren't representing what their people want.
Hmm.
You know, people say, what's your platform and this and that? Like, I just want to be a public servant. Our job is to represent the districts in Congress, not represent our interests, not represent our views, but go out in the community. Hey, guys, what do we need here? Oh, let's talk about this and let's talk about that. I'm a Democrat. You know, I have democratic values and principles. And if elected, you know, that will be what the district agrees with. But specific issues is what I will bring to the floor of Congress and the halls of Congress. And you don't see a lot of that in the Capitol. Well, I didn't. I didn't see a lot of that. There were some individuals that were looking just to make names for themselves and, you know, just represent their own self-interest instead of the people of their communities and this country.
Mm-hmm. I want to ask about the moment that you decided, why not me? What was it about January 6th and maybe in the months and years that followed that made you think, you know what, I could be a member of Congress. Why not me?
So as, you know, as you acknowledged, as I acknowledged also, the catalyst is January 6th. If January 6th happened, you and I aren't having this conversation right now. But it did. January 6th did happen.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no getting away from that, especially because, you know, the candidate for the Republican Party is the instigator of January 6th. And then you have such great individuals retiring. Mr. Sarbanes, he's leaving Congress, and that's what's given me this opportunity to mm-hmm. run. But as I was thinking, am I going to do this? Should I do this? The more and more I was searching for reasons why I shouldn't, I kept finding more reasons why I should.
So you said in an Associated Press interview that, quote, I don't think it's far-fetched to say that we are one election cycle away from extinction of democracy as we know it today. Is there anything that gives you hope?
You know what gives me hope is that people are still engaged. People are still encouraged. People aren't tired. Some people aren't tired of hearing me talk about January 6th. And that gives me hope. That encourages me and it motivates me also, you know, to jump into this race, to want to continue to fight for what I think is right and stand up for individuals who may not have the voice or the reach that through these last 3 years I've been able to obtain. And I am eager and happy to use it for good.
Harry, it's been so enlightening talking to you about the events of January 6th and how you took action that day and the way you're still working to uphold and defend democracy. But now I want to switch gears and get to some of the lighter everyday things that shape you in a segment we like to call The Last Time. So, when is the last time you had a daddy-daughter day?
A few days ago, I took my daughter to Buffalo Wild Wings. We both are wing connoisseurs. I prefer ranch over blue cheese, and she does too.
Do you have specific daddy-daughter day traditions? Is it always wings?
So prior to COVID, we would go to the movies every Tuesday. Mm-hmm. We would try to find a new movie that was out. And if no new ones were out, we would just see something that we've already seen before. But we always like trying new places to eat or, you know, ice cream dessert places are obviously one of our favorites also. So just going out and being foodies, I guess.
Training the next generation of foodies.
Yes.
When's the last time you had a Maryland-style crab?
During the summer season. I usually don't get them too much during the winter. Crab season is during the summertime. And man, you just got, I want one so bad. But I cheat a little bit. I use Old Bay. I put it on everything. I was talking to one of my friends and I was telling him when I scramble my eggs, I usually just put Old Bay in it. So it kind of just,
oh my God,
you know, always keeps that taste of the Old Bay seasoning near and dear. But it's time for crabs.
When is the last time you got a ticket?
I did get a parking ticket a few months ago. My meter expired. Those Park Mobile apps, they're tough to navigate. So I just went ahead and paid it.
Those parking apps drive me absolutely crazy. When's the last time you sang the national anthem?
The Super Bowl. Yeah, at the Super Bowl. Yeah, I sang along with it. I mean, how could you not? It's just so, it's moving. And I think one of the reasons a lot of people sing along with any song is they know the words.
Mm-hmm. Like,
you know, we know the words word for word, line by line. And it was a great performance. It was a great sing-along also.
And finally, when is the last time you played music at your campaign office?
This morning.
What'd you play?
I had an Earth, Wind & Fire playlist on. I just love to start the day with a feel-good moment. And that feel-good moment lasted throughout the whole day. I love music. And if nobody's talking to me, I got my music on low. So it's funny because the staff has come to, Harry's got his music on, so.
Wonderful. Harry, thank you so much for being here. This was such a great conversation. I really, I'm grateful to you for coming on our show.
Well, thanks, Charlotte.
Thanks for making the time.
You got it. Take care.
Maryland's Democratic primary is May 14th. Thank you so much for listening to Person of the Week. If you like what you heard, don't forget to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. And we'd love to hear from you. So send your tips or thoughts on our show to personoftheweek@time.com. I'm Charlotte Alter. See you next week.
Person of the Week is hosted by Charlotte Alter. It's produced by Nina Bisbano and Allison Bailey. Our senior producer is Ursula Summer. Our story editor is Katie Feather. This episode was mixed by Rebecca Seidel. Our theme music was composed by Billy Lippi. Joseph Frischmuth is our fact checker. Person of the Week is a co-production of Time Studios and Sugar 23. At Time, our executive producers are Dave O'Connor, Michael Erlinger, and Sam Jacobs. At Sugar 23, our executive producers are Mike Mayer, Michael Sugar, and Liam Billingham. Sasha Mathias is the head of audio at Time. You can find us online at time.com/personoftheweek and wherever you get your podcasts.